FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's July 24th, 2018. As always, we invite you to join in the discussion and the fun. Nothing better in the morning than kicking back a cup of, well, kicking back my latte that I purchased from an undisclosed coffee shop that will go nameless, other than to state the fact that you don't have to buy anything and you can stay there all day and you can even sleep there if you like. When I was in Vegas, I saw people sleeping in the place, and the facilities are open to one and all. So have at it. So the email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, we're really blessed today to have with us a friend, a new friend. Met him at Freedom Fest in Vegas. Good friend of our friend Doug Casey. His name is Professor Walter E. Block, and he's a professor of economics. Well, you are a professor of economics at Loyola New Orleans, and we're thrilled to have you on the show, Walter.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be with you.
So first, I've often wondered, why did Loyola become a hot seat of Austrian economic thought, which it is now, kind of spread there? Are these ideas starting to catch on?
Well, it's all the fault of my friend and many times co-author, Bill Barnett. Bill Barnett is a longtime Austrian, and he converted the econ department to Austrian libertarianism before I got there. And then when I applied for the job, he was kind enough to support my candidacy, and I've been with him ever since. And together he and I have tried to replicate ourselves, and we have two others, John Labendus and Leo Krasnajan, both of whom are also Austro-libertarians. So we have four out of four Austro-libertarians, which I think is a world's record or something, I'm not sure. But it's all Bill Barnett's fault as to why Loyola is a hotbed of Austro-libertarianism.
Hey, and my alma mater, Pace University, when I went there, I wanted to major in economics. But the problem was that our economics department, this is in mid-70s, was run by communists whose main preoccupation, main desire was to unionize the faculty at Pace University. Well, that didn't go over big. And shortly after I left, Joe Salerno came in. And now, of all places, Pace University, at least the graduate school, is becoming more Austrian by the day. So I guess there's hope, perhaps. Well, been contemplating the situation of homelessness because I was in Vegas. The homeless population is out of control. You don't see it so much on the Strip, but when you leave the Strip, Vegas is rapidly becoming a failed city. And then with all that's going on in San Francisco, where the streets are no longer paved with gold, they're paved with excrement. And I'm thinking, well, this is a case where the state really needs to step in and reinstitutionalize most of these homeless people who are fall into one of three categories for the most part: alcoholic, unable to function, drug addict, unable to function, or what used to be called in less politically correct times, lunatics. And then there's number four, which is people who are down on their luck, economic reasons, lost their job, whatever. They're, for the most part, going to be temporarily homeless people. And the left, the progressives, would like you to believe that everybody falls into that category and that there's no crazy drug addicts or alcoholics living on the streets. How would you envision, Professor, a market-based solution to homelessness? How does this work?
Well, is there one? Before I answer the question, I'm never allowed to answer any question directly since I'm a professor, so I have to make a circuitous route.
We appreciate that.
So my view is that whenever there's a problem, any problem, it's always the government's fault. And we know that as an apodictic certainty. The only question is to fill in the blanks. In this particular case, how did the government screw up? And the government has screwed up in many, many ways. For example, rent control. Rent control is a way of reducing housing. They have public housing, which is a mess. And Jane Jacobs is my guru on this sort of a thing. And then they have, zoning, all sorts of zoning laws and limitations on building houses. And in San Francisco and many other cities, there are places where you're not allowed to build. So government has reduced housing in many, many ways and taxing housing as well. So that's one element. And now this would not attract or satisfy the lunatics or the drug addicts or the people who are really helpless, but it would help people who are sort of down on their luck. And the reason that they're not housed is because the price of housing is so high. And why is the price of housing so high? Because of government. Another one would be unions. Although unionism has been decreasing, still government supported unions raise prices for housing. Okay, so that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is this institutionalization. Before Thomas Szasz got involved, who was very active in getting rid of institutionalization for helpless people, these helpless people were housed in places. Now, were these places private? Many were private. Some were government. I'll have to admit that. But they were housed in places where they were kept off the streets. They were fed. They were clothed. They were trying to be helped. Were these places perfect? No, but they're better than living rough out on the street. So to summarize my answer, it's a combination of government doing too much and then stopping the private enterprise system from doing a little bit to help. Namely, they have all sorts of housing policies that raise the price of housing and put housing beyond the reach of people. And then they undermine the institutionalization of people who were very helpless.
Those great points, all of them. I think obviously the zoning and the high cost of housing, probably more people fall through the cracks economically till they can get the heck out to a place with cheaper housing. I mean, you have to go on the law of substitution, right? So if you can't find expensive housing or housing that you can afford in one place, then you're going to go move someplace else and where the housing prices are a lot cheaper. It might not be nearly as desirable as San Francisco, although desirability in that case is in the eyes of the beholder. I think it's the vulnerable people. And can you make an argument that government should be there to protect people, for instance, who are mentally deficient and cannot take care of themselves? And or have they just crowded out the people who would voluntarily come to the aid of these people? Like you mentioned, nonprofits. You know, that's how hospitals in America started. Benjamin Franklin, I think, started one of the first hospitals, charitable institutions in Philadelphia. So is it crowding out, or is it that you just can't do enough? It isn't structured enough on a voluntary basis. It's really, as a libertarian myself, mostly libertarian, you know, I've grappled with these questions and I haven't really come up with a suitable answer.
Well, one other issue I forgot to mention, and that's the minimum wage law. Minimum wage law in many places is $7, $10 an hour. Well, how about if your productivity is $5 an hour and you could get a job at $5 an hour? You go to jail if an employer offers one of these homeless people a job for $5 an hour. He can go to jail. So one of the problems is that they can't get work. Mm-hmm. Now, I believe in privatization. My motto is if it moves, privatize it. If it doesn't move, privatize it. Since everything either moves or doesn't move, you privatize everything. And certainly you privatize the effort to help helpless people.
Yeah.
Why? Why is privatization good? Well, two main reasons. One, efficiency. The market is more efficient, more effective than the government. And why is that? Because if you do a bad job in the market, you lose money. And if you lose too much money, you go broke, and then you have to do something else. Right. Whereas in the government, if you do a bad job, you just get more subsidies.
You get rewarded.
You get rewarded for failure. The second reason is ethics. In privatization, I notice you're wearing a nice red shirt. You bought that shirt voluntarily. Whereas mm-hmm. if it went through the government, what they would do is first tax you, and then they'd give you the red shirt. So right. on an ethical basis, privatization is better, and on an efficiency basis, privatization is better. And I know of no exceptions, and certainly not the exception of welfare or helping the helpless. So my view would be that the government should get the hell out of this practice. It just bollocks things up, and let the private charitable groups, you know, we have a Cancer Society, we have all sorts of elementary institutions. And if the government would stop doing this and stop taxing people and then doing its welfare system, which just ruins things, we'd be much better off. Now, what's his name? Charles Murray wrote this magnificent book called Losing Ground. And what he said is that the welfare system broke up the family. And the another reason for the helplessness and homelessness of people is that they come from non-intact families. Well, why do they come from non-intact families? They come from non-intact families in the first place because of the government welfare system. So rather than thinking of government helping, what the government should do is get out of this situation because it's bollocking up. It's creating the problem in the first place. And if the government wouldn't if the government just stopped doing this, I'm a libertarian anarchist, so I think the government should stop doing everything. But right now we're on homelessness. So if the government would stop putting its big fat thumb on the problem, the private enterprise system would solve it. And part of the private enterprise system is the charitable sector.
Sure. Well, the thing is, we've never had a good approach in, you know, the last several hundred years of doing this. And I'm not sure, you know, I agree with you. The government is responsible for much of the maladies, many of the maladies that we have in society. But, you know, like, you can't blame government for people being addicted to drugs or becoming alcoholics, other than when you see that tax bill on April 15th, you want to go, you want to do something to kill the pain. But aside from that, realistically, right, how much responsibility does the government have?
Well, my motto, again, I've got a motto for everything, is that everything is the government's fault, including underarm sweating. And I don't know, you name it, it's the government's fault. We just have to find out how, because the government is evil per se. Now, with regard to drug problems, the goddamn government is prohibiting drugs. If then you, what you have is this effect when, you know, when the government prohibits drugs, you have this effect where people go to harder and harder drugs.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. So if we legalize drugs, which is a point we never even mentioned with regard to homelessness, at least not yet, we would be much better off in that way.
Yeah, no doubt we would. Hey, so if the private sector is the cure for all that ails us, what do you think about our progress in becoming more attuned to this as societies? Are we going backwards or are we going forwards here?
Well, I don't know. I think it's two steps forward, two steps backward. Donald Trump has done some good things. He's deregulated things. He's lowered some corporate taxes, which is all to the good. He has done some very bad things. The whatchamacallit, the tariffs and the protectionism is not good. So if you're asking a prognostication, are we moving toward more or less freedom? I guess I would say it's, you know, one or two steps forward, one or two steps backward. There are slight improvements in some ways and slight worsenings in other ways. On the foreign policy thing, he ran for president on a peace policy, on a peace program. And his instincts are very good, like what he's done in North Korea is good. What he's doing with Putin and trying to make friends with Russia is very good. And I regard that as part of freedom. You know, if we have a war with Russia and the whole planet blows up, we're not going to be very free. So he's done some very good things, some very bad things. And I think that's my analysis of the entire society or the entire economy. Are we moving toward or away from freedom? It's hard to say. In some ways, when I started in the libertarian movement in 1965, and we compare 2018 with 1965, in some ways we've improved vastly. And in other ways, we've retrogressed. For example, the libertarian movement is much stronger now than it was when I first started. On the other hand, when I first started, Murray Rothbard, I asked him how many libertarians were there in the world, and he said 25. Well, we've probably got 25 million now. On the other hand, so we've increased proportionally vastly. On the other hand, we might have had half the population now that we now have. So we have 3.5 billion more people, and 25 million is just a drop in the bucket there. So I'm sort of, it's hard to say whether we're moving toward or away from freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. And I wish I had the answer here, Professor. So, but all you can do is keep pushing. Now, you've been controversial. You've received a lot of blowback from people, a lot of vicious attacks. Is that because you're effective, or is that because you're just controversial?
Well, I guess I'm a sexist, a racist, the homophobe, or whatever it is.
It doesn't make you a bad person.
Well, I mean, you know, it depends upon your definition. I mean, what is racism? If racism means you want to lynch black people and you want to burn crosses on their lawns, well, you know, then obviously that's very incompatible with libertarianism, and I'm not a racist in that sense. On the other hand, if you believe that racism means that you see distinctions between the races? Well, I see distinctions between the races. I mean, look at the NDA. Black population in the U.S. is, 12, 13, 14%. The NBA, 85, 90% of them, the superb athletes are black. On the other hand, I happen to be a master's competitive swimmer, and there are no blacks in the pool. Mm-hmm. Now, in the 1930s, they weren't allowed in the pool. Now they've been allowed in the pool for many years. And still, if you look at the Olympics swimming, there are no blacks in the pool. Well, you know, there are these distinctions, and to notice those distinctions is to be a racist, then I'm a racist. But everyone's a racist, for God's sakes, in that sense, because everyone notices that there are differences between whites and blacks and Orientals. There are differences there.
Well, you know what they said in that Broadway show, London show, Avenue Q, everybody's a little racist sometimes. Right.
Well, you know, there is this case now in Harvard where a bunch of Orientals are suing Harvard for discrimination against them.
Asian Americans, right? Asian Americans. You can't call them Orientals anymore, can you?
Oh, horrible. Wait, I have to slap my hand.
Write that down, Professor.
You're not allowed to say actresses anymore. You have to say females are now actors also. It keeps changing. It used to be you could call black people Negroes, and you could call them, I don't know, colored people. Now you have to call them people of color. And political correctness has taken over, especially in universities. So you have to walk on eggshells now if you're going to speak. But I'm not really that politically correct, so I sort of ignore it. Okay. The Orientals, the Asian Americans,
synonyms. The Asian Americans among us.
Right. Now, two of my heroes, Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell, have done a lot of good work on affirmative action, showing that this doesn't really help black people. And, you know, whites have 200 point higher SATs than you do, and Orientals have 400 point higher SATs than you, maybe you'd be better off at, Tulane University, which is a pretty good school right next door to me at Loyola, instead of at Harvard. And what happens is that blacks major in, black studies and sociology and stuff, which won't help them do anything. Whereas if they went to a university like Tulane, where they would be very competitive, or Loyola, they might major in something where they can get a good job, like physics or STEM or anything like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I'm definitely agreeing with you there. We're different. People are different. And we shouldn't all be treated as if we're the same when we're not. What do you think about Jordan Peterson and the grief he's been getting for really stating the obvious?
Yes, well, he's a perfect example. Now, he's not a libertarian. He's sort of got some libertarian tendencies, but he's a hero because he is in Canada. They're even more politically correct than we are in the U.S. And there, you're not supposed to say he or she or anything. You're supposed to say, or I don't know
what people kind.
I'm sorry?
People kind. That was what...
people kind.
Yeah, it's right. All about people kind.
And what he said is, that's crazy. I'm not going to do it. And he violated the strictures in Canada, and he was a hero for that. He is courageous, and he's a wonderful person for standing up to these forces of political correctness. God bless Jordan Peterson, even though he's not a libertarian. I wish he were. I wish he were more libertarian, but what the heck? At least he's a hero.
Yeah, he stood up for something, and people are really, really going for it, aren't they?
Yes, thank goodness for him. And there are other very courageous people who don't toe the political correctness line. They're not cultural Marxists.
Hey, like Donald Trump. For instance,
Donald
right?
Donald Trump, too. Yes, Donald Trump is really good. I mean, the swamp in Washington hates him because he's not politically correct. But he just plows ahead, and he's very courageous, sort of like Jordan Peterson. He's a maverick.
Yeah. So maverick, just for the sake of maverick, isn't really enough. Your heart's got to be in the right place, I guess, and certainly yours is, Professor. We want to find out more about you, read your work. Where do we find you?
WalterBlock.com or go to Loyola University New Orleans and Google me, Walter Block, and you'll get me.
Yeah, just like I got you. And hey, it's been a pleasure connecting with you. One of the highlights of Freedom Fest for me. And I appreciate your coming on the show. If you got any questions for the good professor or myself, just email us, kl@carrielutz.com. Tweet us. Twitter feed is @CarrieLutz. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Professor, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me on your show. It was a pleasure.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.